Hello and welcome to iVow. I'm Jenny Prisk, your host in this conversation with Ruth Buffalo, who is an American woman peacemaker in residence at the Joan B. Kroc Institute for Peace and Justice at the University of San Diego. And we are delighted to welcome you to iVow and to our conversation, Ruth.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Well, you have a very, very full and wonderful bio, and I just want to introduce you some more to our listeners. You are a political healer, a community organizer, a public health professional and educator, and also a citizen of the Mandan, Hidatsa, Arikara Nation, and a descendant of the Chiricahua Apache. Am I correct?
Yes, Chiricahua.
Chiricahua, thank you for correcting me on that. These are beautiful names, but often somewhat challenging for someone like me to pronounce.
You did an amazing job with Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. That was with your assistance. So my first question for you is, what does it mean to you to be the first American woman who has been selected as a peacemaker at the IPJ, and also because you are a Native American woman?
It means a huge responsibility. I'm very honored to be the first U.S. United States citizen to participate in this amazing fellowship. So it means so much to my family, my community, the state of North Dakota, and the entire United States. So it's a huge responsibility, though I feel like I carry a huge burden, but I'm up for the challenge and wanting to share as much as I can from an Indigenous woman's perspective.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Now, as I mentioned earlier, you have a very, very strong background. You have 4 degrees. You have a Bachelor's of Science in Criminal Justice and Master's degrees in Management, Business Administration, and Public Health. And I want to go back to that political point. What does being a political healer mean?
So a political healer is an idea that was really started by young women in Minnesota, and it's now traveling across the United States. But what a political healer means to me is using a very inclusive approach for women. In particular, it focuses on women and how can we find ways to support one another? How can we change the narrative that often is found in political systems? So oftentimes, women who come from low socioeconomic status and backgrounds who have been pushed to the margins oftentimes are not very welcome in political spaces or arenas. And so political healing really embodies a new narrative in these political spaces.
Interesting.
And very much rooted in healing. How can we first and foremost heal ourselves, and how can we heal our families and our communities?
That's a very, very interesting approach. And of course, with the word politics now in the conversation, I have to advise our listeners that you are a representative in District 27 in North Dakota, and that district is actually in South Fargo. What did that mean for you to be elected to that office in 2018?
Gosh, it meant a great deal of pride for my family, my community, and the state of North Dakota and beyond. I grew up, you know, in a 4-bedroom house on the Indian reservation with 10 of us living in there. And so basically being the middle child, but had a very rich upbringing with our culture, with being constantly outside, hiking, what is known today as hiking, I guess you could say, but also in my mom's large garden. So when I think back to where I grew up, in Mandaree, and having so many people share and express throughout this past year how happy and excited they were to see that I won. So it's been very heartwarming, but again, it's a very big responsibility.
Yes. And so what are you fighting for specifically? I know you have rights for women, etc., but specifically, what do you want to achieve while you're in office?
I really want to achieve a safer and stronger North Dakota for all people. And I know that's very broad, but given my background, with criminal justice, bachelor's of science degree, and the different master degrees, and my life experiences. And I believe that there's so much work to be done. And so I'm trying to do the best I can within this, my first term, which is a 4-year term.
Oh, excellent. So you've still got about another 3+ years. Three years to go.
Right. Excellent. And North Dakota is a little different in that we meet every other year for our legislative assembly. So our legislative assembly will reconvene in 2021. So this year that we're in right now, we're doing a lot of interim committee work. So I've been assigned to the interim house, or the Judiciary Interim Committee.
And is that, that would be interesting for you with your degree in criminal justice, no doubt.
Yes, definitely. This past legislative session, I sat on the House Judiciary Committee and the House Agricultural Committee, but I definitely have a strong interest in trying to find justice for families, and also making sure that that we address the inequities within the sentencing disparities within our state of North Dakota, because interestingly enough, within every level of government jails, there is an overrepresentation of Native Americans right down to our juvenile justice system.
Mm-hmm. So that's going to be part of your work, to be able to explore that area.
I would like to, if I can, assist where I can, but also I'm so thankful for the constituents of District 27 who elected me into office. So my first and foremost priority is making sure I'm listening to my constituents and carrying their concerns forward to the Capitol in Bismarck.
You've said in other interviews that I have read of you that you're really concerned about the most vulnerable in your population, and that human trafficking is also another ugly situation that's raised its head. Could you address that in regards to the Native American?
Yes, So in the area, the city that I'm representing, District 27, is Fargo, but I'm also representing South Fargo, which is one of the larger districts in Fargo. Mm-hmm. I used to sit on the City of Fargo's Native American Commission, and in 2017, we heard from people on the ground, different healthcare professionals and homeless shelter workers shared with us what they were seeing, and they saw a lot of our homeless Native American women were mm-hmm. being targeted for human trafficking and sex trafficking within the Fargo-Moorhead area. It's often referred to as the FM Metro because we are right on the border of North Dakota and Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And so within the FM Metro, we have a very large homeless population. And within the homeless population, there again, the Native American population is overrepresented within the homeless population. And so there's a lot of people on the ground doing work, but we're also trying to find ways to support and prevent further human trafficking cases from happening, which led me to introducing some bills at the state level. We also formed a local task force in the Fargo-Moorhead area after the horrific murder of a young Indigenous mother who was 8 months pregnant.
Mm-hmm. That's very tragic.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that point, after a week after the body was found, we convened for our regular scheduled Native American Commission meeting, and I posed the question to the group, what are we going to do moving forward? We have to prevent this from happening. This should never happen. It was just very mm-hmm. devastating,
mm-hmm.
which literally sent shockwaves across our country mm-hmm. because it was just a very horrific, horrific crime. And from that point, we convened monthly, trying to brainstorm and figure out ways to prevent further cases from happening. So we started the local task force at September of 2017, and we continued to met with the City of Fargo's mayor. He was very receptive of the idea of having a task force.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just continued to meet, rain or shine, even if there were two people there. And then when once we heard from the health professionals on the ground regarding what they were seeing in the homeless population, we then added human trafficking onto the task force name. Mm-hmm. But it's very grassroots, and it's led by community members, and it has a very diverse group of key stakeholders.
Mm-hmm.
And so going into the 2019, into this legislative session, I won my election in November of 2018, and at the end of the month at our regular scheduled task force meeting, a longtime legislator woman had attended the meeting, and right before the meeting started, she whispered to me, she said, "Why don't we ask the task force for their ideas on potential legislation they would like to see?" And I was like, "That's a great idea," you know. And so she posed that to the group, and the group was really excited. They were, it was just a very awesome thing to witness.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of empowerment.
Excellent.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so she, the legislator, longtime legislator from Fargo, she actually represents the heart of Fargo, so downtown Fargo area.
Mm-hmm.
So she gave the task force, you know, kind of a homework. She said, you know, "We're going to bring your list to the next meeting in December." Well, it just so happened that I got snowed in on the western side of the state at my mom's house.
Oh, dear.
In Mandaree, so I wasn't able to make the meeting. But they still met and had a really good meeting and sent me their list of bills that they wanted to see. So what's crazy, what's kind of the fun backstory to this is this past summer, a few months ago, this same legislator said to me, you know, we had coffee, we were recapping of how the legislative session went, and she said, "You know, we were just happy." She was very tickled. She said, "We were just happy. We were just thinking we would be happy if only one of these bills passed." And they gave me a list of 6 bills, and all of them went through successfully.
Oh, that's wonderful news. That's very, very comforting news to know that that kind of work is being done in South Dakota, or in South Fargo particularly, but it's for the state of Dakota.
North Dakota, yes.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very fulsome answer, and I thank you for that, Ruth. But what you raised for me was equal rights for Native Americans in the United States, and particularly for women. How are we progressing? How are they standing nowadays, especially with, we have some chaos in the White House. I'm not going to be shy about mentioning that.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been a lot of very negative comments about the people of our land and colored folks. So I just wonder, how is it for you at this stage in time?
There's still so much work that needs to be done. You know, we know that as human beings, we thrive off of connection, off mm-hmm. of building community, building relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And when that is prevented, or when other human beings prevent others from connecting, you know, that's in a sense a form of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And because we as human beings thrive off of connection, building connection to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so much work that needs to be done, but mm-hmm. I'm also very hopeful in the future. As a mom, my children continue to inspire me every day. I have a 16-year-old daughter, a 12-year-old son, and then 2 5-year-old twins, a boy
mm-hmm.
and a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am so blown away, literally, by how much energy they bring and how much foresight they bring to the future. It's very refreshing, and it gives me hope.
Oh, that's excellent to hear. I was going to ask you about your 4 children and how you're viewing the lessons that you're passing on to them and what you wish for them. So are you feeling that there would be a very good future for them ahead as long as the fight continues?
Definitely. I see through my children them building a base or a foundation to serve others and to work towards building equitable spaces and to find justice for all people. But I definitely see that in every single one of them in different forms. My daughter is an artist, and she's had a couple pieces of her work featured in local art shows. One in particular, they're both very amazing, amazing venues. One was at a human rights art and film festival, and the artwork she did was inspired by a larger piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it was addressing the protests that occurred in the peaceful protests that occurred in North Dakota in 2016.
Yes.
And in the middle of these different scenarios of a story that was being told through an Indigenous lens, in the middle of it, she put, "God loves us all the same." And I believe that was so so touching and moving. Mm-hmm. Also, she painted a very nice piece that was selected, and she was able to give her artwork to the director of an agency that served women, so a local agency that served women in need and in crisis. And that was given during an annual Kiwanis pancake breakfast at the Fargo Dome. Mm-hmm. And so we're very proud of her. And then also with the other children, too, we see different forms of them standing up and speaking against injustice. And the younger two, one loves to sing. He's got a hand drum.
Yes.
And the other is always practicing a cultural norm for amongst women, which is like when we lili, it's a sign of honoring others and acknowledging.
What does lili mean? That is the translation,
it's
the honoring.
It's, they kind of rattle their tongue, or it's like a high-pitched... It's,
can you do it?
Not right now.
just a thought. but that's wonderful.
So it's cute to see them, you know, carrying out their own avenues of standing and fighting for humanity.
That's excellent. Yes, and they have you as a role model. Who did you have as role models?
I have a lot of people as role models. I had a lot of people as role models growing up. I was raised by a single mother, and I'm so thankful for my mom and her strength. So I witnessed a lot of strength through my mom.
Mm-hmm.
Before I was born, my grandparents passed away a year before I was born, but my mom wrote a letter to me before I was born, you know, sharing how great of people my grandparents were, and I still have that letter, and so I carry a lot of the wisdom that my grandparents shared with my mom, mm-hmm. with me, and I also share that with my children. And so even though I lost my grandparents before I was born, through our cultural systems that have survived the test of time, which I'm so thankful for, it served as like a safety net or a support system, mm-hmm. of surrogate grandparents in different forms through our clanship systems. And looking back, I was always around older people, like grandmas and grandparents, like elders, especially women. But once I got older, my clan brothers who were around the, could be considered grandparents, really took me under their wing. So I felt that throughout my life, I've had very influential people who are everyday people, but very, very strong in our love for humanity and for one another. So I'm super thankful for my upbringing.
Mm-hmm. I love the way you keep using the word humanity and the safety of humanity. Now, you are a peacemaker with three other women, one from South Sudan, one from Israel, and one from Pakistan. Are you gaining and learning messages or theories or practices from any of them that you can take to North Dakota, and I'm thinking South Fargo, but in North Dakota, that will be useful to you to apply?
Yes, I'm finding that we have a lot of similarities. I had the opportunity, though, at a young age to be immersed in an international community. I attended St. Mary's New England Catholic boarding school, 8th and 9th grade, which was only 85 miles away, and so I was able to go home every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of our classmates were from all across the globe, in particular that stayed in the dorms with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we had students from Tanzania, Ivory Coast, Ghana, South Sudan, Ethiopia, China, Japan.
What a marvelous experience.
And Mexicali, even, you
yes,
know.
Yes.
So it was a very rich experience at a very young age, and mm-hmm. I'm thankful for those experiences to see the common themes of each of our cultures,
mm-hmm.
But still also being willing to learn from one another. Mm-hmm. And so it's why I'm very excited for the rest of these 6 weeks, and I'm seeing a lot of common themes right now, being among other women leaders in different sectors and different countries and environments.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what I'm seeing is also the richness of how can we support one another as women leaders. It's so important to lift one another up and to support each other.
Mm-hmm. Very important. And you, no doubt you are passing on a lot of lessons from your nation and from you personally to the other women. So unfortunately, we're beginning to run out of time, but I'd like you to close with perhaps a description or some words about what those of us who are not Native American don't understand about your lives, about your struggles in this country now and from the past and now, and how we can work towards ameliorating them or changing them in the future.
Right. So I think just really trying to dig deep and understand the true history of this land that we stand on is a great start.
Because how do we do that?
I would say even just by Googling or reaching out to the local, even just a Google search of local tribes in California,
mm-hmm.
and trying to reach out to them and just start by building a relationship and having a conversation, or, you know, trying to have coffee with an individual from one of these tribes and their communities within California.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so important to, in building community, that we reach out to our neighbors to learn more from one another, because, as you know, the famous quote by Maya Angelou is that we're more alike than we're different. And
yes.
I believe, and I'm so thankful that I learned that at a young age. You know, I went from being amongst the majority within a reservation school in Mandaree, where we had a new students, one white student, and I remember her name was Katie. And I still remember her birthday was December 17th, and she
mm-hmm.
stayed in Mandaree with her family for maybe 3 years, from like second, third, and fourth grade, and then she left. She moved to California.
Mm-hmm.
And then we lost touch.
Mm-hmm.
And then little did I know that later I would be put in a similar environment that she once was in my school on the reservation.
Mm-hmm.
Eighth and ninth grade, I then went to being the only Native American in an all-white school system.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think just trying to do a lot of self-reflection and figure out what kind of implicit biases do we hold. And a lot of times we'll find that our implicit biases can be addressed by having a conversation with someone, because what oftentimes I think as humans we fear what we don't know, which kind of leads me to like the history of our country in the United States,
mm-hmm.
which was really founded on a lot of fear,
mm-hmm.
And also founded on genocide. And so really being willing to have these uncomfortable conversations is going to help drive us forward to really enriching each other and leaving a good path for the future generations that are coming up behind us.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that's important, is trying to get to know our neighbors.
Very, very useful information. And talking of conversations, very sadly, I have to conclude ours now.
No worries.
So I'd like to just give you great thanks for
mm-hmm.
joining us today. It's been my pleasure to speak with 2019 woman peacemaker Ruth Buffalo from North Dakota. And we look forward to learning more about you and the legislation that you pass in the future. And thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I will say thank you in the Hidatsa language.
Please.
Matsugidats.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
And thank you.